So, as I slather butter onto my toast in the morning or contemplate the prospect of a nice cheese platter, I occasionally wonder, when I'm not fretting about my cholesterol, whether maybe I've been born into the wrong time and place. Culinary fats are the devil, we're told. They're much maligned. Whole cookbooks and movements and restaurants and TV shows are devoted to the glory of fat-free. So today on Blueprint for Living, we come to praise fats, not to bury them. I'm joined now by Michelle Filipov. She's the author of Fats, A Global History. Michelle, you open your book with the wonderful words, fats are essential to life. Why can't we do without them?
Because they're one of three essential macronutrients that we need to live. Fat, protein and carbohydrates, we can't live without them. And fats are found everywhere that humans can be found.
I love it. I mean, you're right, they're everywhere, even in our lexicon. We chew the fat, we butter someone up, we grease one's palms. They're all over the place. Tell us a bit about the way in which fats played a role in survival for early civilizations.
Well, I mean, it's sometimes hard for us to think about, for those of us who live in a, you know, time of food plenitude, but fats are incredibly rare in nature. And if we think about the difference between, say, our domestic farm animals and wild game animals are incredibly lean. So they were highly desired and highly prized for their fatty organs, for the fatty parts of the animal. And often what happened in a lot of traditional hunter-gatherer societies is that, you know, the hunters often got priority access, you know, to the best parts of the animal snacking at the kill site. And so a lot of historians and anthropologists think that this was really important to social distinction and hierarchy within many traditional societies.
It wasn't until I read your book that I knew about rabbit starvation, where too much lean meat gave you a kind of protein poisoning. You needed the fat.
Yeah, rabbit starvation is a kind of amazing and terrifying. The term came out of some of the early explorers in North America around the Arctic Circle. And particularly during the winter and the early spring, when game animals were incredibly lean, they just couldn't get enough fat to survive. And so they would feel incredibly hungry. But their stomachs were distended, they'd get headaches, they'd get terrible stomach upsets because their body was craving the fat. But no matter how much protein they would eat, they would never feel that they were filled up because it's not what their body needed.
So that recognition of the need meant historically there was a kind of power thing associated with fat. Your medieval feasts with the fatty meat, that was how you knew someone was important.
Yes, because fats were rare. So only those who had significant wealth and power could access them. And being able to display the fact that they could access them further shored up that wealth and power. And in things like feasts, you know, part of how they operated as a social tool, we're talking about, you know, the ancient world, for example, is that it put guests in your debt. You came to their feast, you ate their food, and they indebted you to them.
So what about the advent of restaurants? I'm thinking France in particular, where an emphasis on butter suddenly made fat more available. Was that a kind of turning point?
I mean, certainly a French haute cuisine is, you know, very much associated with butter. The legend goes, and I think this is historically disputed, but the legend still goes that when the, you know, aristocracy after the French Revolution were kind of, you know, unseated, a lot of the aristocratic cooks had nowhere to go. And so what they did was they started restaurants. And sort of prior to about the 17th and 18th century, a lot of the most highly prized sauces were kind of sour sauces, you know, with vinegar and verjuice and that kind of thing. But these French cooks, they started to use butter as an important emulsifier and to make sauces, you know, thicker and more opulent and more luxurious. And so this was also the era of the first celebrity chefs. So Auguste Escoffier, for example, he came from that time where he kind of elevated French sauce making to the art that it became. Carême was another one.
So the other thing, of course, for fat was that it was a necessary way to preserve food in a time before refrigeration. I mean, that's where we get the confit from, isn't it?
Yes. So fat is impermeable to air. So you could cover you know, meats in a jar with liquid oil or liquid fat, and it would harden. And so that would keep out the air. It would protect it from bacteria. And with the confit, you know, you'd have the goose legs or the duck legs in a big pot, and you could just dig out the ones that you would need one by one, and the rest of it would stay sealed.
See, so many uses and delicious and a sign of power and essential. Why have we turned on it? I mean, why? Because fats now occupy a contested place in our contemporary society. Tell me a bit about the way fats portrayed in popular culture.
Okay, so, I mean, to answer your first question about, well, what changed? Why did fats suddenly start to become a problem? I mean, that really only happened in the post-World War II period. It was a time when there was a lot of changes to the food industry. So foods that were once relatively scarce became produced in abundance, and people had a lot more access to fat than they previously had had. And so that raised some health concerns at the time. It was seen as being linked to an increase in heart disease. It's all a bit of a long story, but that persisted for a long time. And so a kind of low fat became enshrined in our dietary guidelines. There was a lot of, I guess, public health campaigning, encouraging people to reduce their fat intake, which was successful. Fat intake has declined significantly. But then in more recent years, we've seen fat appear in celebrated ways in popular culture, in television cooking shows. It was actually when the book came about because I was watching MasterChef, and I was seeing these kind of incredibly opulent use of butter at a time when we were being told we shouldn't eat it. And I thought, this is incredibly interesting. And quite often, I think, you know, when you look at people like Nigella Lawson and some of the other celebrity chefs, this kind of, I guess, resistance to healthy eating edicts becomes part of the pleasure and part of, you know, what we can enjoy from these foods.
The language of indulgence creeping back in again. So do you think, I mean, you talk about the use of butter in films, and you give the example of Beloved as one with a memorable usage.
Yes. So what's interesting about Beloved is it's part of a history of using butter in particular to symbolise racial and gastronomic oppression. So there's a very evocative scene in Beloved where Hallie sees his wife being brutalised by the slave owners of the plantation, which is ironically named Sweet Home, and they take his wife's milk. And he's so kind of traumatised by witnessing her violation that he goes to the butter churn and he's rubbing the butter on his face. And it kind of, the butter is sort of symbolically linked for him to the milk that they took. And there's a number of, I guess, literary references where butter kind of has this symbolic function, referencing kind of racial oppression.
Poor old maligned fat and butter on a roller coaster alongside it. It's been terrific to talk to you today. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you, Michael.
Michelle Filipov's book is called Fats, A Global History. It's published by Reaction Books and available in Australia through New South Books. And that's all we've got time for on Blueprint for Living this week. We'll be back next week talking Venice Biennale, Paula Hawkins, author of Girl on the Train, and much, much more. So get to us then, or in the meantime, go on the website and subscribe to the podcast and listen to us all week long. But now it's time for Ann Jones on Off Track. So bye from us.
Want to hear about the best party in town this election season? It's a new podcast with me, Frank Kelly.
And me, Patricia Carvelis.
The Party Room, your essential guide to this federal election. Subscribe now. Simply search for The Party Room in your podcast app.
Or listen via the RN website, abc.net.au/RN.